I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey everyone, Mark from Guitar Nerds here, giving you a little rundown of what's happening on this week's Patreon episode. We talk about a lot of stuff, mainly talk about the entire Fender amp range, but also Joe shares his plan about getting super buff for the new year. I mean, I don't know what he's thinking, but if you want to hear him talk about it, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. Joe is going to get totally buff. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hi, gang.
And Joe Branton.
Hola.
Indeed. Holla, indeed. No, Matt, no special guest this evening. We were going to have a special guest, and then he'll be on next week.
Maybe.
We got
Danny G. He's not going to win best guest host of 2017.
No, this is...
We've only had two.
Oh, that's true.
Can we just toss a coin?
Yeah.
No, we've had more special guests than that.
Do the Gitcon ones count?
Do what count?
Gitcon.
I didn't listen to any of them.
Gitcon.
You are listening to, I'm going to say, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm just throwing it out there, but it might not even
Can
be
we
true.
Just start, maybe we should
Welcome
just start.
To the world's number one, the world's leading guitar podcast.
The world's greatest podcast about guitars.
The world's best podcast about guitars.
The most cited podcast about guitars.
The world's number one podcast about guitars. We've got loads of stuff coming up on the show. We're going to talk about some new Gear of the Year contenders that have arrived, things that we've been assessing this week. We're also going to talk about some brand new pedals from Pigtronics, some small little micro pedals, and also some brand new guitars from Manson's for Joe Branton's favourite guitar player, Matt Bellamy. Some stuff to look forward to. So, kicking off the show, we're going to talk about some new Gear of the Year stuff because we had some more stuff arrive.
We did.
What have you been looking at, JB?
Well, we had a ton of stuff arrive at our Doddle, and you had to go and pick it all up on
Doddle.
Your own.
So I had a really good story about that. So Doddle we use is like a PO box, basically. And Line 6 and Yamaha delivered some stuff there, and it was like a guitar, a Helix LT, and a bass, and another pedal as well that from someone else. And I sort of got it and went, I can't actually carry this. And got a taxi, called a taxi, or called an Uber, and the guy like pulled up outside, but he was kind of illegally parked, and then a police car came up behind him. So he just kept driving, and then I'm just stood outside holding a guitar, a bass, a Helix LT, and this other pedal. And the guy from Doddle comes out and he's like, do you need a hand? I was like, yeah, I think he's just going to pull in up there on the left. Can we just walk up there? And about 10 minutes later, me and the fella from Doddle are still walking with this stuff. And the guy has pulled in, but I can see just like quite a way up there. So big shout out this week goes out to Doddle, who don't sponsor the podcast, but this one fella in the Brighton branch. Very helpful. Really helpful indeed.
So we got some cool stuff in that delivery. Obviously, the LT meant that you now had a Helix LT to try and a Headrush to try out side
yes,
by side.
Yes, the big Headrush.
That is going to be the big thing.
No. Oh.
That is going to be the big thing of Gotti this year.
I think that's
don't like you calling it that. I said
Why?
This last year.
Yeah, don't
Why?
Say Gotti.
Because you said Gotti.
No, I just don't like that. I don't like the abbreviation. I
think G-O-T-Y? Because we... Gotti.
That's horrible. So I prefer goatee over Gotti.
All right.
Gotti just sounds... Geezer who did that song?
We can each have our own.
Now I'm just somebody that I used to bow. Somebody.
Damn it.
So, Gear of the Year. I think one of the major battles is going to be fought over which is the best kind of floor-based amp modelling system.
Because I guess because there's going to be Helix LT, the Headrush, the new Moore unit.
Yep. Which we haven't seen yet.
No, but
we
might, it is out. I'm hoping it's going to land.
We might not see that. We've had something else submitted by Moore for Gear of the Year, so Ooh. We should probably go with their submission.
Okay, we'll see.
But we'll see if we can get our hands on it and try it. Then yeah definitely worth looking at. But so Helix LT, something I've not spent any time with before. Got to try some a couple of hours over the weekend. It's a cool unit. It sounds really good, really strong on drive sounds, and clean sounds are very nice as well. Obviously, huge range of effects because it's Line 6. The only thing I struggle with is the interface.
Right. Now, here's the thing. I think if you hadn't tried the Headrush, you wouldn't be saying this.
I mean, it just harkens back a bit to kind of older multi-effects. Because it, like I say...
It?
Yeah, but we're so used to having kind of touch screens and stuff. Oh,
intuitive screens.
We got a correction about touch screens, actually. Before we continue down this route, I want to actually read this. So this is from Robin, who says...
Smarty pants Robin.
Yeah, indeed. Robin says, I love the podcast and there is a wealth of interesting info and chat. Not sure about that. But you guys don't have the faintest idea how touch screens work, do you? They're made up of many layers, at least. The LCD screen, a touch-sensitive transparent layer, usually two of them, a protective layer over the top. There is no reason why a touchscreen on the floor can't be super strong, resilient, and waterproof if you don't cut corners. As for cracking the screen, if you don't crack the touch-sensitive layer, they still work, which is why people walk around with broken screens on their phones and they still function. Also, there are two types of touchscreen, capacitive and resistive. That Polytouch floor Jimmer Bob will most likely use a resistive... I think he's talking about the Headrush.
No, he's not. He's talking about that one, the thing that I was talking about last week.
No, the thing that you were talking about last week was
called the Poly...
Yeah, but it didn't have...
Expressive.
It didn't have a touch screen, though, did it?
It did. Yeah.
It wasn't a screen, though.
It was a touch sensitive pad.
Yeah, I think that's different technology, though. That's not... Right. We're not talking about that. Anyway, says the Polytouch floor thingy bob will use a resistive type of touch screen, like the kind you find on bank machines that have a slightly rubbery feel and have a certain amount of pressure to work them. They kind of... the kind they have on hospital equipment where you see nurses bashing the controls with their keys. They're cutting down the price and the danger of failure by not having an LCD screen, which means that it's just a touch sensitive layer. And like the ATMs and heart rate monitors, could be super duper unbreakable. And if we remove the reactionary fear mongering about touchscreens, both of these products could be amazing.
Which I seem to remember is what I was saying.
Well, I also don't think... I mean, listeners, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we laid into the Polytouch thingamabob thing too much about it being breaky. I think we laid into
because
you have to print out a piece of paper for it to work. I don't think that was the issue. What we were talking about is the reliability of the Headrush. And actually, you know, because that does have an LCD screen in there, I do think it is a little more prone than something like the Helix. But having said that...
So, you were saying the Helix, the interface...
Yes.
Was your only thing.
So
think it was convoluted?
Not convoluted, because once you get your head around it, it's actually quite basic, but it's nowhere near as quick.
Well, that's it, isn't it? The Headrush, we all know how to work a phone, and so if you know how to work a phone, then you know how to use the Headrush. There's literally zero learning time with that.
Yeah.
The Helix, you probably need to read the manual first. I mean, that's not a bad thing. Like, look at the Boss MS3. Like, there's no way anyone could work that out without reading the manual.
I must stress as well, I did not read the manual for the Helix. So, to get as far as I got... So, by the end of these few hours of playing with it, I basically had a similar setup to what I'd set up on the Headrush.
Uh-huh.
What I'd set up on the Headrush took me maybe 5-10 minutes. The Helix... It took me the 2 hours, basically, to work it out. So it was setting up, like, two different amps that then feed into a single effects chain. And it definitely is possible to do. It's totally possible to do on the Helix.
Right.
But it's way more difficult. I don't think we should talk about this too much, because I want to cover a lot more of this when we actually do Gear of the Year.
Got it.
And no. And we need to play with them side by side, because that isn't actually, I haven't actually done that. What yeah. I'd like to do is set up a Fender patch and a Fender patch on both of them and listen to that, and then a Boogie and a Boogie and a Marshall and a Marshall, and just get an idea for which sound we prefer, and then we can take the other stuff into account. Okay. The ease of use of the Headrush is a very good feature. So far, in my initial 2 hours, and there was a week at least in between the two, trying the two, I think I prefer the sound of the Helix.
Yeah, I think the Helix for me has been... especially since they released, you know, their firmware update where they added another 20 bass amps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Helix LP is an absolute...
There's been a new Headrush update as well, so I don't know what that's added.
I haven't looked at what it adds.
What we need to do is update the firmware on both of them before we do the final testing for Gear of the Year, I think.
But that was cool. And we've got the Shuriken, so we're going to check that out.
We have, again, some more, again, that will factor into our testing, I think. Mm-hmm. Line 6 Shuriken. Which is the
signature model for Stevic of 12-foot Ninja.
Yeah, which is, we talked about it, it was released right at the beginning of the year, and it's, I mean, the shape is definitely not for me, I'll say that right off the bat. It's very much a kind of metal-styled guitar. Uh-huh. But the technology obviously is fantastic, so it'd be interesting to see what we can do with that and the Helix to experiment in the run-up to Gear of the Year.
Absolutely.
Did we get... Oh, we got a nice Yamaha bass. I don't know if you've been... I left it with you. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're really good. So, obviously, I used to play BBs load, so I really like this new series.
So, this is
the 734A, which is their... I think it's almost the flagship one. Whilst there are loads of models in this series, this seems to be the model that they're like using for a lot of demos, and they seem to be lending out to a lot of players as well. So the 734 comes in like a satin black with a matching headstock and that satin black finished neck.
It's very stealth.
Very stealth, yeah. Gloss black scratch plate, P bass and jazz bass pickup. It's got an active and passive switch, so you have a 3-band EQ with the active, or you can just flick onto passive. So it's definitely the most versatile and kind of like the most modern looking. It's the one that's taken the biggest step away from what the BBs were previously.
Yeah.
And I think done a very good job of modernizing. For me, I loved the old BBs. So this, because they have moved away from that by making the body slimmer, slightly smaller, because, yeah, it was heavy and cumbersome.
I mean, those old ones, the 4 series?
The 434s and the 1024s, were the last.
The ones that, what was the one you could get in sparkly orange?
Oh, no, it's the one before that. It was the 414.
And they were like an oversized dinner plate, basically. Yeah, they weren't
liked
them. Gibson Ripper size.
Yeah, they were. They were, had that big sort of lower bout. And I really liked them for that. I thought they were cool. For me, super comfy. I appreciate it might not be everyone's cup of tea. So, yes, this is definitely making that bass more suitable for the masses. For me, I still kind of preferred the old heavyweight version. But it's nonetheless, it's an absolutely cracking bass. I love the new inlays they've got. To have a bass that's like sub £900 that has an active passive switch, guitarists probably aren't aware, but on basses, if you get an
active bass...
I'm sure they're definitely not. on most basses sort of below the £1,000 mark, if you get an active bass, it never has an active passive switch on it, so it kind of ties you into one thing. So it's super cool that this can do that. It makes it a really, really versatile bass. I think this is a cracker.
Another thing that came through in the post, the last thing I had to carry down the road on my own, thanks Joe, was we received a Earthquaker Devices data corruptor, which we've talked about a bit, but I left it with you to have a play around with. What was the early impressions?
So the Earthquaker Devices data corruptor is definitely, it's another bonkers pedal. It does something totally different from like their most famous bonkers pedal, which is obviously the Rainbow Machine. It does something totally different. In that the Rainbow Machine is like, you know, a sort of a delay chorus, like self-oscillating thing. Whereas the data corruptor is like a sort of fuzz-y...
like weird bit crushery.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So they're totally different effects, but I think the purpose is the same. The purpose being nonsense.
Yeah.
So for that, I think great. Even I'm struggling to find an application for it. I appreciate that that's the point. And it can make some great crazy sounds. I'm just trying to find... We messed around with it a little bit whilst you were around the other
we
the
did.
Other day. It's, and it was difficult to... Like, I remember there was a point where you were playing it and you were like, it doesn't matter what I do. Like, it's not making a difference
coming
what
out the
note
same
you're
note.
Playing.
Yeah, it's just completely.
Exactly. And of course, you know, you could do exactly the same thing with, you know, loads of pedals if you just dimed all their controls. It's very easy. Like, try diming the controls on any chorus pedal. Like, you know, if it makes it unusable. Sure. It was just trying to find the usable settings on the Dead Corruptor was tricky.
There's less usable settings than on a chorus pedal, I would say.
This makes it sound like I'm downplaying this pedal. I think it's an awesome pedal and absolutely the right pedal for Earthquake to make. They ran like an advert campaign where they had I've forgotten his name, the guitarist
Les Paul.
it doesn't matter anyway, they put it in the hands
that went
of
nowhere.
The they put it in the hands of the right people, and so I Deerhoof, the guitarist from Deerhoof.
Okay,
so and that's absolutely the right sort of band for this pedal, so, and he did some cool things with it, albeit totally bonkers thing. So great pedal.
You should have seen it. It was so Joe had all these pedals out on the floor and we had the Data Corruptor, and I know this is hard to believe, but Joe has actually got one of the best guitars I've ever played. Really tasteful, you know, complete opposite of him basically. Like, good, useful, tasteful, good looking.
Just like me.
What is it, a 175?
It's a 175.
Gibson,
yeah.
17, custom, yeah, shop 175.
You actually bought it?
Yeah,
Actual money?
Well, I had to get it on finance, but yes, I've got it now.
I thought that was a joke.
No, I told you all I was getting it.
But we don't
trust
anything
you say.
Yeah, but
you said it in the way
that
you're saying it right now, which is completely unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, it's there. I wanted a really good guitar. What's weird about that?
It's absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
What didn't show it off was plugging it into the Data Corruptor, because as Joe mentioned, at one point I was playing like scales all the way up and down the neck, like going from, you know, right on the bass strings right up to the top end, and basically every time I hit a note, exactly the same sound was coming out of the Data Corruptor. So I think you could have plugged in like a Squire Bullet at that point and you would have been making exactly the same sound.
You also got to try my Sterling St. Vincent, which you were less impressed with than you were with the Sterling Valentine.
I tell you why, is because it doesn't have the roasted or the torrified, as we found out, that means roasted, maple neck. It has a, it's got a maple neck still, but they haven't done the kind of...
It's not a roasted maple neck finish on a St. Vincent.
I realise that, but I think at the lower price point, I think just that plain maple neck comes off as feeling a little bit cheap, whereas I think the torrified neck, the roasted neck, feels more expensive than it should be. Did you get to play with that this weekend, Jay? Because I saw you put a picture up on your Instagram of you with the Sterling.
I did, yeah.
Valentine.
I've picked that up a lot over the last couple of weeks. I've actually, I've probably played more guitar since that guitar's been in my house than I have in ages.
It's got that real feel to it, isn't it?
It's such a great guitar. I think I might have to buy one. It's so fantastic.
This gear of the year is going to be dangerous, I think. I could get one of those.
It really is such a great guitar.
Sterling version where it's at like an affordable price point.
Completely. No, it's
such
a
contender.
It's great. And I agree with you, actually. I think that in terms of producing a cheaper model, I think they've done a better job with the Valentine than they have with the St. Vincent. Although, yeah, I think the St. Vincent, when you're at the in the proper versions, I think that the St. Vincent is probably a better guitar.
You'll have to fight Matty for that one.
Well, yeah, completely. If they ever done a Sterling Albert Lee?
No, they have not.
Really? Okay, that would be cool. I'd really like to see one of those.
That would be interesting. We'll have to see.
Cool. So lots of guitar played this week, probably more than ever, I think. You know, we normally come in and Jay, you're like, yeah, I've not really played any guitar, but Gear of the Year's kind of made us all ramp up our playing.
Yeah, completely.
I'm up for it. And I think, do you know what? I'm more excited about this year's Gear of the Year than I have been for definitely more excited than last year. I think there's better products this year.
Yeah, this year has been,
and maybe even
bang.
The year before. I think there's a lot to kind of fight over, particularly the guitar category. There's been a lot of good stuff.
Think about it, like we've got the Fender Professional, Fender Offsets, the Valentine, the St. Vincent. I appreciate we probably can't have St. Vincent back in there again.
Well, we could do if we thought it was good enough. But I would strongly, strongly
Shuriken.
Point people
I don't think I think if we're only allowing one.
One from each brand.
Yeah, I would say that the James Valentine.
I think there's going to be little mini fights before that, isn't there? Because we've got two Chapman guitars to talk about as well. We've got the one that they submitted.
Yeah.
Plus, Matt's been loving the baritone. Yeah. So maybe we talk about that as well. Yeah. It's the guitar category this year is going to be hot. Yeah, hotly contested, I think. Looking forward to it. Now, the reason that I was round wasn't just to play your St. Vincent and look at your surprisingly good guitar.
My gear is good.
I would dispute that. I've played some of the guitars in your house and some of them are rubbish.
There was a Mustang bass there. Did you like that?
No, not particularly. It was okay. It was okay. I don't like short scale. It just makes me feel, you know, weird.
I like short scale guitars.
It makes me feel like a normal human when actually, you know, I'm used to being dwarfed by the guitar that I'm holding.
See, I'm the other way around, I think. That doesn't make any sense.
No, exactly. It'd be tiny on you.
Or far away.
On the other hand, it's massive.
Oh.
So, the reason I was round is that we did a bit of recording.
Yes.
Season two. Of Branton's Ranton.
You better believe it. First episode is up there now.
Seen a lot of people talking about it on the Facebook group, Joe.
So we should talk about what the first episode is, but let's not spoil any of the others because there's some absolute crackers coming
out. I won't
say
what they are. The first episode is me having a pop at people who have small pedal boards with a little bit of a shout out about how much I hate people with no pedals or people who have pedals but no pedal board.
Yeah.
But the focus is on people with small pedal
I think
boards.
That's the worst out of all of them.
Out of those three types of people.
For me, and you'll hear it in the episode that I argue for this, I don't mind you having a small pedal board. Some people don't need a lot of pedals, unlike Joe, to sound good. And having no pedals is no problem either, because some people don't need any pedals to sound good. The worst of all worlds is people who turn up at a gig and they've got like four or five pedals and they just plop them down on the floor and then they've got to put a battery in each one and it's a faff. But we go into that loads in the episode.
Yeah. But it was definitely the safest topic. I think we started off,
mainly because you hadn't drunk half a bottle of scotch or whatever it was by the time we got to episode six.
Yeah.
So six more episodes of mega ranting.
I'm not sure how coherent it's going to be for the audience by the end.
I think number six is a little bit bad. Not the quality of it is bad, but...
You're glad it's behind a paywall.
I'm 100% glad that people have to pay for it. If you want to listen to that, we should say patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you'll get the new series of Branton's Ranton. It's worth listening to. It's definitely worth a listen. We should also just quickly talk about, and I put something up in the Facebook group about it, the podcast schedule over the next couple of months. So because Matt's been away for 3 months or whatever it is, and because you're going away towards Christmas, Gear of the Year this year is actually going to be bumped into next year. So January the 8th, I think it is, it goes live, something like that. I think we're recording on the 6th, and that means I've got to spend all Sunday editing it to go up on the Monday. So Monday the 8th of January, I think, is when Gear of the Year starts. To cover you until then, because we normally like to do it in our kind of Christmas break, what we're going to do is, obviously, there's Branton's Ranton coming out, and that will be Patreon exclusive. So if you're signed up to the Patreon, you'll get one of those every week from now until, the six episodes. So that takes you through, basically, to maybe that Sunday. Maybe Sunday the 7th, I think, of January. So you're covered for angry rants.
You're releasing them on a Sunday evening?
Yeah, Sunday morning.
Sunday... The Lord's Day. People are supposed to be going to church.
They can listen to this on the way, and then they can go and repent. They can go and confess that they listened to it on a Sunday. Is that how it works?
Just keep on going.
Okay, good. So they're coming out. And then also we're going to do a little Christmas special, Gear of Yesteryear special, that will be free to everyone in the regular podcast feed. And that's going to go out at some point in the Christmas break. We're yet to record it. But I think what we're going to do is go through and old episode of Guitarist or Total Guitar.
I think it's Total Guitar.
That's got the gear of the decade, 2000 to 2010. And there's some absolute crackers in there. We're going to talk about the stuff, our kind of memories of them, and how some of them have aged very badly. So, yeah, that will be the kind of Christmas special coming out in the break. And then up till then, how many more podcasts have you got before you go away? Two?
What's the date today? Today's the 4th, December the 4th, be with you. So Christmas is in 3 weeks. 3 weeks today.
Well, there we go.
How about that? I'm here next week. And the 18th, I think Matt said he's back.
So we might lose you. So it might be
No, I'll be here for the 18th.
So might be the boys back in town.
We might all do one last hurrah. And then, what, is that it? I don't know if we're doing anything around Christmas. I didn't look at the schedule.
Yeah, and then we come back in the new year, I guess, after that.
Yeah, because I'm... we're not going to podcast on Christmas Day.
Oh, I really thought
I'm not here. Well, I mean, I can do it on Skype.
You've cancelled all my Christmas plans.
And then we're not going to do anything on New Year's Day because obviously Joe Branton.
He'll be dead. I mean, RIP JB.
1985 to 2018.
1984. He's the oldest one out of all of us.
You're 84?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're not older than Mark. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Unbelievable. So yeah, just wanted to give you the heads up on the things that are happening. So yeah, we've got a couple more episodes before Crimbo, and then the Xmas, and then we're going to be back in the new year. But there will be stuff to tide you over, so we're not leaving you in the lurch as we've pushed Gear of the Year back. Anyway, we should dive into a whole big barrel of
Newt.
Blimey. First up, some new guitars from Manson. Four new models for Joe's favourite guitarist, Matt Bellamy.
Yeah, so straight after the announcement of Mikey Demas and his official announcement, obviously if you're a loyal Guitar Nerds listener, you heard it all here first, a embargo-busting exclusive straight from the horse's mouth. So nothing wasn't me, Governor, as they say in the 60s. Anyway, Matt Bellamy has released some new guitars from Manson's. They are all quite similar, and you have to wait 12 months if you want to buy any of them because there's a big old waiting list.
Perfect Christmas present.
You're right there, Joe.
Yep.
So the first one is the MB1 Santa 2.0.
Cool, and there are three others just like it. Next on
you cannot.
So this has got what they're saying is a Manson MIDI screen. I wonder if they moved away from the Chaos pad.
Yeah, I wonder.
Well, no, in all seriousness, because I thought they had Chaos pads in them, and maybe I'm incorrect, or maybe Manson have gone and found something similar.
Firstly, I don't think they make that size Chaos pad anymore. Secondly, right. Probably they don't want to be paying
the license fee. Of course, yeah, I'm sure that's absolutely true. But yeah, I don't know anything about that side of things. But yeah, that guitar is bird's eye neck, two piece swamp ash body. It's got a Sustainiac in the neck.
And that's pretty
cool. £4,299.
They are a big old chunk of money.
It's a lot of money.
But then, the Sustainiac in the neck, and that's something that's across the board. That's in all four models as well. But
they're British made, and there's got that. You know, it's not just the standard guitar, is it? They've got MIDI screen and stuff.
Of course,
like that,
so. And you know, you really are. You know what you're getting with a Manson guitar. Yeah. It is hand built in Exeter, and it is built completely to the artist's specifications.
Indeed.
So there's that. There's also the Black Knight, the MB1T.
Black Knight.
My favourite Batman movie. I don't know.
the Black Knight Rises.
This has got a different pickup in. It's a similar sort of guitar.
No, this one's got Floyd, and then the other two are hardtails.
You're just rushing me through this, aren't you? I quite like drawing.
I love
it
the level of enthusiasm. These are like popular guitars.
I'm just murking him off. That's
okay,
what it
fine.
Is. Then there's the MB1 Red Alert, my favourite Command & Conquer game.
I love that one, so good.
Command & Conquer Red Alert was a fantastic game.
What was there was like a building or something, or resources needed or something like that. There's like a little voiceover thing.
So yeah, with that, you've got again the Sustainiac, Goto Bridge.
What's the price on these other two models?
$3,799. Weirdly enough, the cheapest one out of the lot is the one that's limited to only 10.
Okay.
Which is the Drone 05. The DR1 with the words Drone 05, like, sort of spray painted on it.
I'm glad that one's the cheapest, because that was like that's like an army green with that sort of,
I assume, because
spray.
they did an album called Drones, didn't they? So
did
I
they?
Think it, yeah, it fits into that.
Right, okay.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah, this one is limited to just 10 pieces, numbers 4 through 13.
Okay, I assume
he's got numbers 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
This one, I mean, I'm not really into the green, but if you're into green guitars, then maybe you will be. And it's got an ebony board, military olive green, they call it.
Okay.
And this has got a Psychopath PF1, which is a pickup I've not heard of before. I don't know if that's an own brand thing.
It's a Manson pickup.
Is it a Manson pickup?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then this has also got an actual neck pickup. It's not got the Sustainiac.
So a little bit less kind of gimmicky.
Yeah,
that one.
And it's hardtail. So yeah, this one is $2,349, which is more the sort of price I was expecting for this sort of guitar. The green doesn't do it for me, unless it's like a sort of vintage green.
Yeah.
That always puts me off. But I think the guitar itself, like that, without the sort of bells and whistles of the Floyd or the Manson MIDI port, whatever they called it.
I don't think it was Manson MIDI port.
I think this looks quite cool, actually. So, yeah, very cool.
Interesting to see that there's still so much demand for these guitars. I mean
they're still one of the biggest rock bands in
totally,
the world.
And they were headlining Reading when I first went in 2001 or 2000 maybe?
No, they weren't.
They were.
No, they were not. Well, no, because I went at all of those and they weren't. I've never seen it.
It
would have been later. I think
2000.
Yeah.
When did
I definitely didn't go out in 2002 and they headlined.
What's that record called? Origin of Symmetry? Is that what that's called?
Yeah, something like that. That came out around the time. And
came out in July 2001. So
there we go.
2001 or maybe 2002.
I was at 2001, so it wasn't then. But
are you sure you just didn't not watch them?
I'm positive.
He would have watched them. They were his favourite band back
then. I could tell you what year it was. It was the same year that the Marshall Mode 4 came out, because they were the first band to use them live, and they were very, very loud indeed. If you can find out when the Marshall Mode 4 came out, that was the year.
I'm just looking at Reading lineups. They did not play in 2001.
2000?
No, didn't play. It wasn't earlier.
Well, let's wait for Stato here to...
Also not true.
What?
Let's have a look at 2002.
Maybe it was 2002. I didn't go in 2003.
They didn't play in 2002, and I'm not looking anymore.
Really?
So,
find out what year the Marshall Mode 4 came out. Because they were using them, and I saw them at Reading using them. And they were the first band to use them live.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
That wasn't in 2003.
This, I definitely didn't go any later than that.
Were they on the main stage?
Are you sure it was Reading?
Yes.
Okay, not in 2004.
It would have been unusual to have them at what was essentially a punk festival in the early 2000s.
I'm going to look this up.
Also not 2005. Maybe yeah, I've just missed
I
it.
I don't think, I bet you've missed it.
They have done a Glastonbury, but I
2006. Is that when you went?
No, I did not. Did you? I didn't go in 2006. No.
So it was wait, yeah. Muse, The Streets, Arctic Monkeys, Feeder, Dirty Pretty Things, and the Futureheads.
Right up your street.
I did not. I like the Futureheads. They're a good band. Anyway, while we're talking about the next thing, someone look that up because I need to find out. Otherwise, it's going to absolutely rack my brains. The next bit of news this week, Moore. Not Moore. I don't mean Moore. I mean Pigtronics. You know why I'm thinking Moore? Because we're talking about micro pedals.
Yes, that's right.
Pigtronics, who are have been known for kind of more kind of boutique-y stuff in the past, yeah, now are clearly doing some more kind of I guess regular guitarist friendly stuff.
Yeah, this is great. So Pigtronics have sort of stepped into the ring a bit more with mini pedals. Now this isn't actually new news, because the Philosopher's Tone they've done as a micro pedal for some time.
Sure, but there was three new ones.
That's
I think.
Right. They've expanded the range, so now they have five pedals in their micro pedal range. Now these are, I mean, if listeners, if any of you've had a chance to get hold of the Philosopher's Tone micro pedal, it's alarmingly well made. Like, we love all the Moore stuff, that's definitely super cool, but the Moore stuff represents that standard line of quality that you expect from a micro pedal. Yeah, they're a little basic. They have those tiny little control knobs and everything.
Yeah.
I think the best ones kind of in the mainstream market at the moment have always been Exotic Effects, with their like SP Booster, and there's, I can't remember the name of the compressor, SL compressor.
Yeah.
Were both like absolutely fantastic pedals, incredible build quality, and I think that Pigtronics have kind of followed suit with that. So really interesting sort of unique shaped control knobs, really heavyweight and rugged and like a little bit taller.
You say unique, they're the same ones that are on the X5 series, Golden Brownie and stuff like that.
Oh, are they? That's interesting.
And I've got a feeling the housings might also be made in the same place, because they look very similar
to
the
X5. That would make sense, because the X5 is certainly, the Golden Brownie is one that I would reference as like a super well-built pedal. Well, certainly the Philosopher's Tone felt like that, and it looks like the rest of these are going to follow suit. So, joining the Philosopher's Tone, and I'm not sure what the three new ones were, so the other four are the Gatekeeper, the Class A Boost, the Octavia.
Yeah, those are the three new ones. Because Disnortion's been out a little while, so yeah, right. It's those three middle ones.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Jay, do you want to?
Yeah,
talk about
so it? The Class A Boost Micro actually takes over and has superseded now the Class A Boost, which is discontinued.
Okay.
Oh, that's
interesting.
Cool.
Does it still have the multi-power input? Because that was always the great thing about the Class A Boost.
What, that you could run it at 9 or anywhere between 9 and 18 volts?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, well, thankfully my little segue there allowed the screen the time it needed to load so that I can answer your question.
Good.
With the answer, yes.
Okay, good.
It says it on the top of the pedal.
Yeah, my eyesight's really bad. Okay. Thanks for bringing that up.
Sorry.
So that's a great pedal. We've always raved about that. I think that was one of the first, I'd say that was one of the first of this sort of generation of kind of boutique pedals that we really got excited by. I mean, obviously Matt Knight doesn't count because he was born in a boutique pedal catalogue.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us, I think it was one of the first ones that we really said, okay,
what
this
was the
pedal
what,
thing is
what
very
was the
cool.
drive pedal that we were pairing it with? Because when we were working at GAC, we were selling those, and maybe it was a fuzz they were doing?
What, Pigtronics?
Yeah.
Fat Drive?
Fat Drive, that's it. Definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah. That
Pigtronics Fat Drive?
Something like that. Fat something. It was definitely Fat something. So we were pairing the Class A Boost with those, and it was, you were basically getting like two really good drive sounds, because you can kind of drive the Class A Boost if you turn it all the way up.
Yeah.
And it was a combination.
Fat Drive was a cool pedal. But yeah, so there's a Class A Boost. The Gatekeeper Micro is a
just a noise gate.
It's just a noise gate, yeah. And it takes over from a... Let me just double check that. Yeah, it does take over. I thought I was going a bit bonkers for a sec there. But no, yeah, that again, the Gatekeeper takes over from the old Gatekeeper. The Octava
That's the most interesting one.
Well, it's interesting in a couple of ways. So first of all, it is a little bit different in that you've got a few other bits and pieces. You've also got a fuzz on a micro knob in the middle. But the thing that I think is very interesting about it is it actually doesn't. It isn't a new pedal.
No, it's just part of a
yeah. An
old
it's
pedal.
It's from the Distortion.
Okay.
So it's the Octava was a on the Distortion, which is a pedal that I remember Matt and I loving back in the day. Was a sort of multi effects. So he had overdrive, fuzz, and Octava on
yeah.
it. So the Octava has taken the Octava from the Distortion, but added the fuzz from the Distortion.
So
and the Octava was a big old pedal. It was like a imagine like
wait,
a
the Distortion was a big pedal.
Sorry, the Distortion was a big pedal. It was kind of like a I guess maybe the size of a large Strymon pedals. And they've taken two of those functionalities and boshed it down into a micro pedal.
So just looking at the current micro Distortion, that looks like it's got the fuzz on it as well, but looks like it doesn't have the octave.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've basically kind of split the pedal in two, and one side you get the fuzz and octave, and the other side you get the Distortion and fuzz.
Yeah, I guess so. I thought the Distortion was actually just the overdrive. Although looking at it, it does say fuzz shape.
Yeah.
Which is a bit weird. I might have to have a go on that. I've not actually used one, but although that's also offering you an option to switch between series and parallel. So presumably there is the drive and the fuzz yeah. in there together. But yeah, and yeah, with the Octava, you've just got the Octava plus the fuzz. So yeah, very cool. Very cool little group of pedals. Pigtronics, really glad they're still doing some cool stuff. They really, you know, when we started doing this in 2013 or whatever it was, I think they were one of the first pedal companies that really made us all stand up and go, actually, this whole, there might be something to this pedal thing, you know?
Pedals are all right.
You know, well, there might be something to this pedal thing.
Definitely.
And yeah, I'm glad it's still going.
Yeah, and I just like they used the headline, Honey, I Shrunk the Pigs, at the top of the page with that information
that.
On. Absolutely fantastic. Joe Branton talking about cool pedals, fantastic pedals, if you will. A brand new offering on the EQ front. What are we looking at?
So Free the Tone have put out a new 10-band programmable EQ. What makes this pedal different and quite interesting is... that whilst it's a programmable EQ, so you can load presets on a second foot switch, that normally means that the EQ is going to be digital, but in this case it's actually an analog EQ that uses a digital kind of circuit to display everything. So building presets with this pedal is super awesome. Like, live use of this is a little bit different, but I think that is the choice you make if you want a programmable EQ. This is great for having several presets, and you can load those up on a second foot switch, which allows you to keep pressing that foot switch to flick between 1 and 4, and then you've got a second, like, bypass foot switch. The 10 bands of EQ are displayed in blue dots on an LCD screen in the middle of the pedal. And then you've got to use two little buttons to flick left and right and just one rotary to control that sort of up or down. So kind of like live manipulation of this is a little tricky.
Yeah.
But what you are getting in exchange for that is a great sounding analog EQ pedal that you can load up with presets, which isn't something you'd normally be able to do. So
I mean,
wicked and interesting.
I realise I might be asking the wrong person here, but would you ever really need... more than four EQ, well, five really, because you can have it off. Would you really need more than five EQ settings in one live performance?
Well, that is true. I've found very limited use for sort of EQ. I'd use an EQ pedal for one thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it might be...
make gooder.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Or like, you know, you might use it as a little... like I used to use one of those GE7Bs to shut down all the high end.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
Turn it
yeah.
on to just turn me into like a sub, sort of a like reggae sounding bass for a little bit. But yeah, I imagine if you're going to use, it would be interesting actually, listeners, to hear from any of you, maybe on the Facebook group, to sort of tell us how, if any of you do use programmable EQs and how you use them, because it's something that's maybe a little bit lost on me. I understand that you would want to use these in conjunction with other things, like you might have one that helps drive the front end of your amp, another one that you're using for sort of dubby stuff, another one. Yeah, you know, it's just, this is, EQ is the sort of thing that you can deal with a lot of those same features with your pickups, you know, with your tone control, I appreciate with much less accuracy. But yeah, it'd be, I'd struggle to get to need 4 or 5 presets on an EQ pedal.
I think you're committing to EQ choices with this. It's not like something like, you know, like a Boss G7 where you can bend down and, like, you know, move the faders up and down and do that. So I guess it's probably aimed at people who are, you know, that maybe have got MIDI controllers built in, because I assume there's MIDI in and out on it. You might there just is, want to check that. Okay, fine. So, you know, if you are, let's say you've got, you know, H9 or something, that's the Eventide H9, that's the kind of centre of your rig, but you don't like how it handles EQ, you could potentially run this in the same setup and this would deal with your EQ.
I guess so,
I guess it's, if you've got a rig built like that and you want a fantastic sounding EQ, which I'm assuming this is, because Free the Tone makes some excellent stuff.
Yeah, of course.
This would kind of be, and you know, as Chase Bliss put it, it's that kind of digital brain, analog heart type thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you've got all the control, the digital control, and you can build it into a bigger setup, and you don't necessarily need that kind of hands-on control, but it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
How big a market that is for EQ, I'm not so sure.
They do a guitar and a bass version, so two different versions that to cater for each instrument. But yeah, it's an interesting thing, an EQ pedal, because they do very...
Well, especially expensive ones. I don't know, have you got the price on this? It's not going to be cheap, because it's Free the Tone.
$380 is what we're looking
That's
at here.
Money.
Yeah. Like I said, for someone who, and particularly I think people who own other Free the Tone stuff.
Completely.
You know, it's all very high end, it's all very boutique.
They are very, very cool pedals.
Yeah.
Very, very cool pedals. And you don't see them very regularly, and I think on people's boards. And I think that might be because they kind of sit in that sort of Strymon and Eventide price bracket. But they haven't seemed to develop that cult following, which is weird, because it's, the branding is very cool, the pedals look great, they're all super high quality.
Don't think they've got a distributor
over here
in the UK. I'm not sure where you can buy them from, if anywhere. I know that when we dealt with them in the past for review stuff, they sent stuff directly from Japan. Which I'm sure we'll be seeing some more Free the Tone stuff in the future, with the EQ pedal is something that we want to get stuck into. I mean, I don't know if it's much call for the Guitar Nerds audience for a programmable 10-band EQ, but an interesting product nonetheless.
Just having a look on their website, the Ambispace. Yeah. Now, that sounds something that's...
That sounds more up our street.
Right up our... Have you come across that at all?
No. Which one did we use? We used the Tri...
The Chorus. Yeah, the Tri-Avatar, I think.
Tri-Avatar Chorus.
That chorus was... utterly fantastic.
I've not heard the Ambispace, which again I think comes back to the fact that maybe they don't have anyone
doing
kind
it over
of
here.
Like supporting them over here, because you know that should be, by the sound of things, a pedal that's in the mix with Strymon and Eventide, like you say. So interesting stuff. We haven't done any questions on Guitar Nerds for I think weeks. I can't remember the last time we did questions. So should we dive into a big old cavernous vortex of
questions?
You know, when you do that into a mono microphone, it will just sound like you won't be going left and right like you were doing with your head. You'll just be going up, in and out volume wise.
That's okay.
Okay.
So the first question that we've got here comes from Mark, age 33, from Brighton. And he said, can you please tell me when Muse played the Reading Festivals?
That was amazing. That sounded just like something I would ask.
And the answer for you, Mark, 33, of Brighton, is they first played in the year 1999, when they... I can't tell you when they played, because they are listed alphabetically.
Okay.
They played the premiere stage.
Okay, I didn't go in 1999, I don't think.
The next year that they played was headlining the Radio 1 stage in the year 2000. So
maybe
quite the jump.
That was the year I went, maybe.
Quite the jump. As a quick aside...
I thought they were main stage, though.
Well, I'll get to that. But as a quick aside, the year before, in 1999, the band that the two bands that opened the Radio 1 stage were Top Loader and Coldplay.
Oh god.
Opening the Radio 1 stage.
Can't think of anything worse. Back to back.
And then the following year, not the following year, 2002, so they had a year off. There they are, main support to the Foo Fighters on the main stage.
Well, 2001 was
2002.
That? 2002. Maybe that was the year I saw them.
So yeah, that's quite a stacked lineup there. Foo Fighters, Muse, Ash, Sum 41, The Hives, A, Less Than Jake, Andrew WK, Vex Red, and Sahara Hot Nights.
God, do you remember Vex Red?
I can't say any songs. But I remember them.
They were the band who Ross Robinson, who was the Korn producer, they were a British band that he latched onto, and it was like, whoa, hold the phone, lads. There's going to be a British Korn. And yeah, they didn't do anything, unsurprisingly. But thank you, Jay. I hope that's answered Mark's question satisfactorily. It was 2002, I think, I saw them.
Well, there you go then.
There we go. So let's get on to the first real question. Colin says, novelty guitar Christmas presents, sub £100, fun accessories or gear-related knickknacks that would be good stocking fillers for guitarists. Looking for unusual or interesting, what have you seen? Joe Branton. What is that? Why do I look at your computer while we're doing this?
So this is my favourite sort of thing. Like, you know, we're talking about knick-knack gifts.
Knick-knack.
And do you know what that means? Travel guitars. That's right, because there's a lot of bang you can buck.
There's a lot of bang you can buck.
Buck in the
I wish you'd buck.
There's a lot of bang.
In the sub £100 price point for travel guitars, including the Harley Benton Santos Series Finger Trainer. That's right, everyone. It's a whole 7 frets of rosewood with some tuners on it and some strings. It's just like a fretboard. It's just a fretboard.
But only 7 frets.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's all you need. It's a finger trainer. It's sort of designed for the left hand only, but you could definitely sort of strum away a little bit, you know. It's great. It's €39, and the Santos Series finger trainer is ultimate. So there have been like a few things coming out recently, like a little sort of click down to the size of a phone. Like, you know, these things, they just look like a fretboard.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what this is, but you can sort of tune the strings. And that's exactly what you want. What I want to be able to do is walk down the street and pull a guitar out of my pocket and start playing.
Is that guitar in your pocket, or are you just pleased to meet me?
Exactly. So anyway, the Harley Benton Santos Series Finger Trainer, I think, is an excellent product. And at €39, it falls well under that €100 price point. However, if you are willing to go simply £12 over the £100 limitation on this, then you could treat yourself to a Hofner HCT Shorty electric travel guitar, which they do in a fantastic, very bold turquoise with a single humbucker in the bridge, hardtail, all 6 strings on there,
and it's an actual guitar that actually works.
It's an actual electric guitar. It looks totally awesome. Yeah, the Hofner Shorties are an absolutely banging piece of kit. Totally underrated. And for £112, I think there's very little else on the market. Now, obviously, Epiphone did release the SLs.
I was going to say exactly this.
Which, of course, and no one can come close because, you know, they're like £89 or £79 now. They've gone down.
I have that. Are they £79?
Oh, it's just absolutely
bonkers. I might have to get one.
Yeah, I mean, there are buckets of them turning up at work next week.
Because they're in every colour, all the cool colours ever made,
well,
and they're
actually,
£79.
Yeah, and because, of course, the UK and Europe are getting sort of what's left from when they landed in America, can you guess what colour there are less of substantially?
Pink?
Pink, yeah.
Really?
We were able to get hold of far fewer than the other colours. I was very pleased to see that we were able to get hold of plenty of the yellows.
Is that the one that you want?
Yeah, I think the yellow's the coolest.
No, the pink's the best.
Well, the pink is the best, but, you know, I figure Matt will definitely buy the pink one, so I'll get a yellow one. But, you know, obviously, I think if we're talking about Christmas gifts this year, come on, like, for less than the price of a Boss pedal, you can get yourself the ultimate guitar to mod. I think that's what we're going to see throughout the next year or so. There's going to be like the internet is going to be full of modded SLs.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
On that note, it's worth having a follow of what Ryan at 60 Cycle Hum has been doing, because he has done exactly that. He was one of the first people to get a video up of the SL when he was at NAMM, and it just blew up because loads of people wanted to... The guitar blew up in his hands.
Okay.
Dangerous. It didn't. The video blew up.
Okay.
Virally.
Okay.
It's an expression that we're using.
Sounds painful.
Right. But yeah, he has been doing loads of modding with his, and it's been getting quite a lot of traction. Yeah. Really cool. Like, a lot of very, very cool stuff on it.
Yeah, super cool.
Also, it's worth mentioning that if you spend a tiny bit more, you could also look at the Squire Mustang.
I'm extremely glad that you were the one to say that and not me, because I do have up on my screen right now the Squire Bullet Mustang, and I didn't want to sound like a corporate shill.
What are they, 114?
100, yeah, just over 100 quid. Yeah. Fantastic. Again, small, super thin body, very, very cool. Interestingly, it's kind of like...
Again, two more guitars potentially for Gear
of
the Year.
Well, clearly.
What, and absolutely. No money, 79 quid.
I know. The guitar
category is banging this year.
Yeah. Totally hot. Yeah, I think what's really funny about these two guitars in particular is traditionally we would have always said, okay, you want to get a starter guitar. What sort of sound are you into? Are you into sort of like thinner, like sort of the single coil sound?
I like this is going.
Or are you into sort of more rounded, sort of rocky sound? Because if that's the case, if you're into that really thin, nice cutting through sound, you want to go for this Epiphone. And if you're into this nice, warm, rounded sound, then you want to go for this Squire Mustang. I just think it's so funny.
They're made in the same factory.
We've
put the wrong pickups on the wrong one. The humbuckers are supposed to go on the Les Paul, and the single coil is supposed to go on the Mustang.
I don't think that's what happened.
No,
but
neither
do I. I think it's an interesting point. The other thing that I would suggest for a sort of cool knick-knack, although maybe not as... I guess it depends on how...
You're not allowed to say Fender Bluetooth speakers.
How I wasn't
going to. You're contractually obliged not
but
to say
But thanks for doing it for me. I obviously couldn't do that. I wouldn't be able to include the Fender Bluetooth speakers just because they're a little bit over the price point.
Not really guitar products either.
Well, the Fender Newport is, £195. It's a little bit over. That,
this is unbelievable.
It's a little bit over the... Still a great product, though. Great product. Two-band EQ on that.
No.
And
I gave you an out there. There was a perfect time for you to stop talking about it.
USB out as well, so you can charge your phone with
it
as well.
But
I won't bring those in as well. The Monterey as well, probably.
No.
there is.
I haven't finished. Got a product. Yeah. So it's a little bit. No. The Moore preamps, which we haven't got around to seeing.
No.
They were announced at Winter NAMM, I think.
You might have seen them. Have you had your hands on them?
Yeah. I've seen the preamps. I haven't actually tried any out yet. Believe it or not, I will be later this week.
Okay.
Are you going to be doing a video where you plug them all in at once?
I'm running out of ideas.
I was thinking this about doing a Marshall video. It's like, okay, so there's a bit of an escalation going on here because you did all the Marshalls. There's another one coming out. Where you use a lot of amps.
Yeah.
You did a keyboard one today where you plugged in 8 Moogs at synths. It's like, what can you do next?
Okay, so yeah, the next one we're doing is the biggest, smallest rig.
Right, okay.
So I'm making like a double stereo rig of battery amps and Moore effects.
Right, okay, fine.
It's going to be great.
So just a huge Moore-only pedal board.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Speaking of... sorry to go on a slight tangent, but speaking of you plugging in loads of Moog keyboards, I've got a bit of a story about that.
Okay.
A few years ago, Mark and I went to see our mate DJing at this really weird analog synth night. And it started off with a performance of people playing analog synth, but actually all they were doing was, as far as I could tell, rolling their head on the keyboard and then seeing what noise came out, because it was just drones. And it was, it was quite impressive. Anyway, at the end of it, we had parked in the car park over the road, and it was an underground car park, and these geezers were just playing their synths in the car park. And it was extremely eerie. Very, very weird.
They were recording something, weren't they?
Well, so we saw them doing that.
How were they plugging them in?
Just through like some sort of battery amp, I don't know. But a couple of months later, we went to the same night, and I bumped into one of the fellas who I'd seen recording. I was like, oh, mate, I saw you... I saw you recording. I saw you playing in the car park. He was like, oh yeah, it's part of a new series we're doing. It's called 13, I think it was. And what happens is 13 of us have gone to 13 different car parks and we've played our synths for 13 minutes. And I was thinking, okay, I mean, I get what you're doing there. And I thought, well, maybe that will be a cool little exercise. You can see how architecture and the different, the size and shape of the room that you're playing your analog synth in, how that affects what you're playing. And he was like, yeah, that's kind of it. Except for once we finished, we're going to take all 13 tracks and put them on top of each other, and it will just be one 13-minute song. And I was like, oh, okay.
So completely lost any of the ambience.
Completely, just...
That was also the same gig where someone was reading out his poetry while cutting bits of his own hair off onto the floor.
Wonderful.
Yeah, art and it. I'm going to just shout out to a couple of other bits, actually, that are not guitar accessories as such, but they are cool Christmas present. Two books, one of which I own, the other one I don't, but I hear it's very, very good. First up, How to Modify Guitar Pedals by Brian Wampler. If you're thinking of getting into messing around with guitar effects, and, you know, taking the backs off things and making new circuits and building pedals of your own, apparently is the best book available, and it's definitely under £100, but it is quite expensive. I think it's like £50 or £60, something like that. Although there is a digital version available somewhere, you might need to contact Brian for more information on that. But apparently that book is great. The other one,
I mean, I would expect nothing less from the person that hosts the best guitar podcast in the world.
Wait, we're number one. Oh, we're crumbs. Number one. The other book is Beatles Gear, which we've talked about and referenced a fair few times on this podcast. Helped me out when I was making our most recent Beatles video on YouTube. It's a fantastic book, and if you're talking about kind of coffee table books for guitarists, it's definitely up there. Beautiful pictures of all the instruments, all the stories behind it, talking about how they were using handmade, like homemade amps to begin with.
I thought they were using Selmers to begin with.
Well, yes and no. More that they were like, someone was taking Selma parts, I think, and building their own amps or something.
Right, okay.
The beginning of the book is really interesting. The gear later on is way cooler, but the beginning is really interesting because it just shows you how things have changed in the 60 years, roughly, in between them kind of starting playing and now. Because loads of the stuff is, like, hand-built at home. You know, you'd have... Uncle Ray or whatever, who's like used to build transistor radios and fancied building amps and stuff, and they're getting like, you know, 5 watts, so loud, 5 watts, and so the book's really cool for that. And the reason I bring it up is because I've got the book, unsurprisingly, and I was reading some at home the other day, and I keep coming across things that I didn't know before. I'm someone who knows a fair amount about Beatles, you know, equipment and songs and stuff. There's tons of facts in there as well. So, yeah, that would be a shout-out. I think it's about £35, and it's a big, big picture book. I say picture book, there's loads of text in there as well. So, yeah, those would be my two things. Joe, you look like you've got one more thing to add.
Well, yeah, one more thing, just that's a good kind of affordable gift for guitarists, something that makes sort of playing at home kind of fun and a bit more dynamic is looper pedals, and there are loads on the market at the moment, and they've got really, really affordable recently. So, like, again, you know, our favourites Moore have things like the Micro Looper, which I think at the moment is the cheapest looper you can get on the market at the moment as we podcast.
What about a Ditto?
They're around £68. The TC Dittos are £79. In fact, the Boss RC1 looper is slightly cheaper than that at £77. And there's the Hotone, also do the Wally looper, which I think is the coolest looking one, and actually quite fun as well, just controls-wise, coming in at around £74. So there's kind of loads of choice out there for not a lot of money, just for making, like, playing at home really fun. If you don't own a looper, you should really get one. Like, they're not a massive investment, and if you're not doing it sort of live, if it's just for home, then you don't need a complicated one. Like, the Moore's the most simple. It has no extra features. You know, it's just, you know, you're looping, you're overdubbing, you're double tapping to stop.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really like the simplicity of that. The only control you get on the Moore one is the level of the loop as well. But yeah, they're super cool. Get a looper.
Yeah, you should get a loop, but that's one of the things that if I don't get a Helix, this new board that I'm building, I'm going to keep the Ditto Looper because it is invaluable. So we've kind of come up to time. That is it for this podcast. If you want to hear more, we're going to go and do a Patreon episode where we carry on last week's topic and give you a rundown of Fender amps, the current ranges, what we like, what we don't like, and some, you know, how they sound, basically. We had a question last week about Marshall, the current Marshall and Fender ranges. Last week we covered most of Marshall. This week we're going to tackle Fender. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you get to support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At $5 a month you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds podcast content every week, plus access to the mini series such as Branton's Rant On series 1 and 2. You also get access to Matt in Japan, which has been his little mini series on his time away, plus some exclusive interviews as well. And at the $10 range, you get your name read out on the main podcast every week in one breath by Joey Branton, while me and Jay do a little soundtrack underneath. Very much, he's having a swig of his drink, like this.
Derek Winter, Marty Cliff, Matt Davis, Eric Sherman, Blake Warren, Jay Craig, Christopher Loseth, Ron Currier, Scott Kennedy, Robert Smith, Rob Lopez, Rob Grant, Derek Ritz, Chris Grunner, Sandy Joyce, Scholars, Patrick Steele, Michael, Tony Platt, Holmes, Mark Cross, Brad Pace, Sadie Shaw, Danny McKenzie, Laurie Esther, Jack Godfrey, Paul Corrigan, Mike Coyne, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moo, Gravit, Colin Anderson.
It's getting really long, that list, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you want to make that even more awkward for Joe every week, please do do sign up at the $10 tier, because the more names, the harder it's going to be.
That was harder this week.
Yeah, it felt like it went on for a long time. Did you read some of it twice?
No. I added Blair Toms got hold of me and said, can I call him Tony Blair Toms again?
Yeah, okay.
So I did.
Okay, good. Good to know. You could join in the conversation around the podcast if you go to facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. We'll be doing... Ooh, we should really kick off the poll for listeners' choice for Gear of the Year.
Oh, no.
We need to do that. We'll be taking some submissions.
Just be aware, listeners, whatever you vote for, I will veto on the GOTY. Your opinions aren't valid to me.
Your opinions very much. Also, if you want to suggest categories for Gear of the Year,
mixing it up as well.
Yeah, we're going to mix it up because, you know, we've always done weirdest gear, and, you know, we do best accessories, and I think the product stuff is pretty set in stone. So we'll have best guitar, best bass, best amp, or best bass related thing, best amp, best pedal, best accessory. And then we've got some room to play with stuff. We kind of like doing...
Like the best villain.
Yeah, okay, the internet's villain.
Being sort of
best
Bonamassa
guitar villain.
Versus
well, there's been
Bo
a lot.
Banton.
There's been a lot this year, because Kirk Hammett did his speech this year about his pedals being the first ones made by an actual guitarist.
Yeah.
So he could be there. We've got Joe Bonamassa. We've got Bo Banton. Mm-hmm. Obviously a villain, or is he a hero? But yeah, I'm up for the idea of playing around with the categories a bit. So if you've got something that you think we should cover, someone suggested best brand, which I think is cool.
Yeah, best brand.
A lot of companies this year have brought out some good
Boss
stuff.
Boss versus Fender.
Yeah, who will win? So we might do that. We don't
know. Just going to lock him out. It's at my house.
Yeah. So if you want to suggest something that we should be covering in Gear of the Year, please do it there. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram @GuitarNerds, and go to YouTube. I think we're going to do one more video before the end of the year, which will probably be our Christmas gift guide for this year.
Are you just going to pick the things that we said?
Some of the things that we've said are on that list, but I think I'm going to do top 10, so there'll be 10 cool things.
Why didn't
things.
You chime in with any options?
I did.
Then?
I said the books, didn't I?
Well, okay, yeah, I suppose.
You can do that by going to youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Thanks very much for listening this week, and we will see you next week.
Farewell.
Thanks, gang.
Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.